January 1984, the NFL's Manhattan offices. The most powerful man in American sports sits alone at his desk. A lit cigarette billowing smoke rests on an ashtray, and steam rises from a hot cup of coffee. But Commissioner Pete Rozelle ignores both. In his meaty hands is a 46-page document. The cover reads, "Spending the USFL dollar." This better be good, Rozelle thinks. Hell, we paid a Harvard professor big bucks for it. The professor's assignment? Tell the NFL how to end this annoying USFL problem. Rozelle looks toward the door, which is open just a sliver. He barks to his secretary stationed outside.
No calls, no interruptions. I need an hour of alone time.
Okay, Mr. Rozelle.
He turns to the first page, which features a single quotation plucked from Sun Tzu's military strategic epic, The Art of War. He reads the line aloud.
To conquer the enemy without resorting to war is the most desirable. Huh. Interesting.
As he flips the pages, Rozelle feels his shoulders relaxing, his jaw unclenching. Pure bliss. Point by point, the business professor explains how the NFL can take a samurai sword to the head of the USFL and end this so-called rival league once and for all. Rozelle reaches for his phone in excitement and calls his close friend, Art Modell, who owns the Cleveland Browns.
Art, I've just gotten the Harvard report on how we're going to take down the USFL. It's brilliant.
Rozelle thumbs through to the pages he's marked up.
Listen to this. Send undesirable players to the USFL, any that are problem players or overvalued.
That's smart. That helps on a few fronts.
And then we encourage the USFL to unionize and steal their biggest stars.
These are pretty bold suggestions.
Wait, there's more. We move up our college draft in order to compete with the USFL's draft. They thought they had that one over on us. Not so fast.
Rozelle rattles on, listing tactic after tactic to bring down the USFL. Normally reserved, Rozelle is giddy. A few weeks later, 65 NFL executives gather inside a large New York City conference room to hear a presentation on the report. Afterward, as the men leave the room, they laugh and slap each other's backs with enthusiasm. For far too long, the NFL has kicked back and watched the USFL take its best shot. Now, it's time for the bully to take action. Now, it's time to swing away.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode, we learned Donald Trump's real reason for purchasing a USFL team, to use the new league to land himself an NFL franchise. Talking his way into the exclusive league hasn't worked, so Trump has a new strategy. This is Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Trump decides his next best shot for getting into the NFL is to get the USFL to shift from playing in the spring to the fall. That way, the USFL will directly challenge the NFL. He's convinced this will force the NFL to either merge with the USFL or to gobble up USFL franchises, including his own. Trump tells his fellow USFL owners that the NFL is terrified of them. And he's right. The USFL has signed away the last two Heisman Trophy winners and has stolen dozens of NFL stars. The new league's willingness to throw around dollars has blown up pro football's once steady salary structure. And the USFL's action-packed games make the NFL appear stale. Through sheer will, bullying, and ceaseless lies and exaggerations, Trump gains an unusual level of power in the USFL. His fellow owners give him the green light to negotiate a new TV deal, undermining the role of Commissioner Simmons. Trump takes his new authority and runs with it. He creates a pretend publicist named John Barron to hype up the USFL's interest in moving to fall. Barron is, in fact, Donald Trump with a disguised voice. He spends his days calling newspapers.
This is John Barron. I'm a publicist working for Donald Trump. I love your work, so I wanted to give you early access to a good story. Listen, Mr. Trump has big plans for the USFL, and they involve a move to fall and a direct battle with the NFL. Now, you can use me as a source, but not by name, okay? And I can probably get Mr. Trump on the phone for an interview, too, if you'd like.
Interesting. If Trump can confirm this, that would be great. Thanks, John.
No problem. I'll have Mr. Trump call you within the hour.
Donald Trump's next move is to reach out to the reporter.
Hey, so John Barron said I should call you. What were you guys talking about?
John and I spoke just on background, and he said fall is looking more and more likely.
I don't want to speak for John, but I can't disagree.
The next day, readers learn about the USFL's increasingly inevitable move to fall. And the news has to be true, right? Because it's bolstered by on-the-record quotations from Donald Trump, as well as an anonymous source. Chicago White Sox owner Eddie Einhorn gets in on the action, too. He's interested in buying the USFL's new Windy City franchise, and he's a pal of Trump's. Together, Trump and Einhorn spend a lot of time calling network executives one by one, gauging their interest in televising fall United States Football League games.
We're moving to the fall. Would you put our games on TV?
The network executive doesn't have time to beat around the bush.
No.
Why not?
Because there's another league in the fall. It's called the NFL.
Trump tells the other owners that ABC will pay $30 million, double what it's paying now, if the league moves to the fall. His claim is completely untrue. April 15th, 1984. The New York Times runs a story with the headline, USFL envisions fall schedule beginning in 1987. The article cites an anonymous source as saying, quote, "It's the only logical way for the league to continue. There's virtually no chance it's not going to happen," close quote. It's obvious to everyone inside the USFL just who provided that tip. And though his fellow USFL owners are aware of Trump's antics, they feel increasingly paralyzed by his efforts. He's loud, he's bombastic, he's bullying, he's wealthy. He owns the headlines. His New Jersey-based team, big market, major TV numbers, is a market the USFL can't do without. USFL owners are constantly walking on eggshells. Before long, their mantra morphs from "We're a spring league" into maybe we're a spring league to we're likely moving to fall. Finally, in August of 1984, after the second season has ended, the handful of owners with enough guts to take on Trump decide to construct a blockade, or you could say a concrete wall. For $600,000, the USFL commissions the management consultant firm McKinsey & Company. They want the agency to produce a lengthy and detailed study on the demographics of switching to a fall schedule. Most of the owners are certain the results will scream unambiguously, do not switch seasons and go head-to-head with the NFL. And lo and behold, the results scream unambiguously, do not switch seasons and go head-to-head with the NFL. It would, after all, be suicide. August 21st, 1984. The Hyatt Regency Hotel in Chicago. The USFL's owners are gathered inside a conference room to finally hear the results of the McKinsey study. Yesterday, the New York Times ran yet another Trump-generated piece with a headline, USFL set for fall play in 86. The league's chiefs collectively groan. Trump sits next to his peers, totally comfortable with the preposterous headline that seems to hover over them. McKinsey executive Sharon Patrick stands before the table and unloads.
Our studies show spring football can work, and your original ideas, untraditional markets, fund promotions, regional alliances, it's so smart, it really is, but you lack unity. You don't have a common goal, and these stories talking about fall are not helping. Thanks to all the sniping, the conflicting headlines, nobody seems to trust the USFL's long-term sustainability.
Many in the room nod in agreement. It's a painful truth that makes sense. John Bassett, the owner of the Tampa Bay Bandits, jumps in.
So what are you suggesting?
It's pretty simple. You need to stay in spring and establish credibility, at least for the 1985 and 1986 seasons, and perhaps even longer. Then, after enough time, maybe you'll be strong enough to switch seasons, but not until then. Any questions?
She looks around, trying to make eye contact with the owners, who sheepishly look down or out the window. She waits and waits and waits. Not a word spoken. Donald Trump, arms crossed, is scowling at her. After some polite thanks and handshakes, Patrick leaves. Trump stands up, slamming his fist into the table.
Bullshit! This report is bullshit, and I'll tell you what, if you all want to stick with spring, you're gonna do it without me.
He pauses, looking around the room.
The fall is where it's at. We've been talking to the different networks, and they love the idea of televising our games, but only in the fall, the season of football.
This, of course, is a lie. Trump stands before the room and gets ready to deliver his coup de grace.
In 2 years, this league has lost $60 million. $60 million!
That number is accurate, but it's what founder David Dixon always predicted. Starting a new sports league means losing dollars before making dollars. The next day, the USFL owners decide to officially vote on the league's future. Will it remain in spring? Presumably without a Big Apple-based team and its famous owner. Or will it go on a fall suicide mission? Sitting around the conference table again, they vote by secret paper ballot. One by one, the men fill out slips of paper and deposit them into, of all things, a hat. It's a simple question. Should the USFL move to fall? Chet Simmons, the once mighty commissioner whose power is all but gone, gathers the votes and reads them off.
One for fall. Two for fall. Three for fall. One for spring.
The USFL's fate is sealed. All but four of the owners support the move. The majority either believe Trump's promises or feel pressured by him. Tampa Bay Bandits owner John Bassett is equal parts dumbfounded and outraged. After the meeting, he corners Trump.
You just killed the USFL. I hope you realize that.
Trump smiles widely. It's all part of his plan. When Roselle learns of the USFL's decision to relocate seasons, he wastes no time telling his legions what will happen next. He calls an emergency meeting in his office with his top deputies.
They're going to sue us. It's a definite.
Roselle is convinced the USFL will argue that the NFL has monopolized fall football television, thereby eliminating the USFL's opportunity to compete. The USFL will almost certainly argue that it's a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. A violation of that law, and this is important, triples all damages won in court.
If we lose a big decision, we're permanently wounded.
A few weeks later, Roselle writes a letter to Simmons and leaks it to myriad media outlets. The note has nothing to do with commissioner-to-commissioner communication and everything to do with mounting an early defense. Roselle wants to intimidate the USFL, to let Simmons and company know that the National Football League can see what's really happening. Up to this moment, the NFL has held back in fully going after the USFL. They've been afraid of getting sued. But now, Roselle initiates a conference call with the owners. He's changed his tune.
It's time to stop being nice. If they want a fight, we'll give them a fight.
On October 18, 1984, Bill McSherry, the United States Football League's general counsel, heads to the United States District Court of New York. In his briefcase is a 39-page complaint. The suit accuses the NFL and Roselle of monopolistic practices. The league's exclusive arrangement with the three major networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, effectively makes it impossible for rival leagues to exist, the argument goes. The USFL is seeking damages of $440 million. Thanks to the Sherman Antitrust Act, that number will automatically snowball to $1.32 billion. Roselle is furious. He knew it was coming, but still, $1.32 billion. The number itself is bonkers. Interestingly, USFL Commissioner Chet Simmons feels the same way. Simmons has been marginalized by Trump's outsized role in decision-making. At this point, he's got one foot out the door. He steals a page from Trump's book and turns to the media for cover, holding a press conference.
Look, we're the victim of a bully. The NFL is trying to deny us a place at the table. All we want is to be treated fairly.
All in all, the USFL's owners and executives feel the lawsuit goes over well in the news media. A case could certainly be made that the NFL worked to snuff out all rivals. Meanwhile, the USFL, even with its financial losses, even with some team relocations and franchise deaths, clearly brought forth a quality product. The USFL might not be quite on par with the NFL, but it isn't all that far away. That night, McSherry, the USFL's general counsel, sleeps soundly. Then he wakes up the next morning to hell. Donald Trump is about to take full control of the USFL's lawsuit by bringing in an old diabolical friend. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases.
So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. October 19th, 1984, Larchmont, New York. The USFL's head lawyer, Bill McSherry, is asleep in his bedroom when his wife, Betty, shakes his shoulders.
Bill, wake up. You have to see this.
She points toward the television, which is tuned to NBC. On the screen are two men sitting next to each other on a couch. They're holding a press conference about the USFL's lawsuit against the NFL. One of them is Donald Trump.
I think we have an excellent lawsuit. We have a case of a total monopoly by the NFL, and we expect to be successful in court. We're not doing this for any other reason.
The other is notorious attorney Roy Cohn.
Tie up three networks when they dictate to you you can't play football, when the fans want you to play football, when they tie up stadiums with leases, so you have no place to play.
McSherry looks at his wife, a confused expression crossing his face. Bewilderment shifts to fury. Trump called the press conference out of the blue without telling anyone from the USFL, least of all McSherry.
Of all the people Donald can hire as my co-counsel, he gets this sleazeball?
The assessment is correct, in part. Cohn is indeed a sleazeball, who's known for his ruthless tactics. But Trump hasn't brought him on to serve as McSherry's co-counsel. Cohn will lead the case by himself. It's all his now. Trump's known Cohn since 1973, when Cohn helped defend his family from a housing discrimination suit brought by the government. The Trumps were accused of violating the law by refusing to rent units on the basis of race. Cohn's advice for Trump?
Tell them to go to hell and fight the thing in court and let them prove you discriminated.
Cohn's claim to fame dates to the mid-1950s, when he represented Joseph McCarthy. Together, they brought down alleged American communists and communist sympathizers. Right now, though, about a dozen reporters listen as Cohn launches into his bombastic, sinister best. He stands, he points, he barks. He snarls.
I have proof that the NFL has formed a secret committee with the sole purpose of killing off the USFL. What sort of proof do you have? Obviously, the information was supplied to us, and obviously, when the NFL created this USFL committee, they did not create it for the purpose of going over the airwaves or into newsprint. They didn't expect anybody to know about it. We allege it was done in a clandestine manner.
Trump is sitting quietly at Cohn's side. A reporter turns to Trump with a question.
Mr. Trump, why are you representing the USFL and not Commissioner Simmons?
I have the full backing of the USFL to go ahead.
As the owner with the biggest team in the biggest market, it's only appropriate. Donald Trump is the key to the USFL's success.
One day later,
The league's owners meet at Amelia Island Plantations, a resort just north of Jacksonville, Florida. The gathering has been planned for months. Only what was supposed to be a run-of-the-mill state of the USFL dialogue is now a what-the-hell-is-going-on-here vent-o-rama. Many of the men arrive with a recent issue of Sports Illustrated in hand. The magazines run a story with a headline, "The networks have told the league to drop dead if it insists on moving its 86th season to the fall." Commissioner Simmons knows he's been all but replaced by Trump. He kicks off the meeting with an announcement.
"Thank you for gathering here today for these important conversations, gentlemen. The time has come for me to leave the league and pursue other avenues. It's been an interesting run, to say the least."
And with that, Simmons steps away from the microphone and rushes out the door as quickly as possible. As the day progresses, one by one, owners condemn Trump for his off-the-cuff press conference, for bringing in the awful Roy Cohn, for pretending he's the king of the United States Football League. Owner John Bassett has never held back his opinion of Trump and calls him out again.
"I'm not a genius, but if I were judging from afar, I'd have to think you're not someone who's looking out for the best interests of the USFL. You're just looking out for the best interest of Donald Trump. And that, sir, is shameful."
Trump is nonplussed, and the meeting comes to a close. The United States Football League will play the 1985 season in the spring, then prepare for fall 1986. The league will also move forward with a $440 million lawsuit against the NFL. They'll need a new commissioner, too. And, of course, no matter who that commissioner is, the league now belongs to Donald J. Trump. Next time on Business Wars, the USFL finally has its day, well, month, in court, and it places its future in the hands of one man, Donald Trump. And the NFL is fighting for its life. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Business Wars. A quick note about the conversations you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Jeff Perlman wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Emily Frost edited this story. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie, created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.